Chapter 21. Pearson did not observe anything further in the vice to cause him misgiving till one dinner time, a week later, towards the end of the visit. Then, as he sat himself between her and her mother at their limited table, he was struck with her nervousness, and was tempted to say, "Why are you troubled, my little dearest?" In tones which disclosed that he was as troubled as she. "Am I troubled?" she said with a start, turning her gentle hazel eyes upon him. "Yes, I suppose I am. It is because I have received a letter from an old friend." "You didn't show it to me," said her mother. "No, I tore it up." "Why?" "It was not necessary to keep it, so I destroyed it." Mrs. Pearson did not press her further on the subject, and the vice showed no disposition to continue it. They retired rather early, as they always did, but Pearson remained pacing about his studio a long while, musing on many things, not the least being the perception that to wed a woman may be by no means the same thing as to be united with her. The old friend of a vice's remark had sounded very much like lover. Otherwise, why should the letter have so greatly disturbed her? There seemed to be something uncanny, after all, about London, in its relation to his contemplated marriage. When as he had first come up, she was easier with him than now. And yet his bringing her there had helped his cause. The house had decidedly impressed her almost overawed her, and though he owned that by no law of nature or reason had her mother or himself any right to urge on the vice partnership with him against her inclination, he resolved to make the most of having her under his influence by getting the wedding details settled before she and her mother left. The next morning he proceeded to do this. When he encountered the vice, there was a trace of apprehension on her face, but he set that down to a fear that as he had offended him the night before by her taciturnity. Directly he requested her mother, in the vice's presence, to get her to fix the day quite early, Mrs. Pearson became brighter and brisker. She, too, plainly had doubts about the wisdom of delay, and turning to her daughter said, "Now, my dear, do you hear?" It was ultimately agreed that the widow and her daughter should go back in a day or two to await Pearson's arrival on the wedding eve, immediately after their return. In pursuance of the arrangement, Pearson found himself on the south shore of England in the gloom of the aforesaid evening, the isle, as he looked across at it with his approach, being just discernible as a moping countenance, a creature sullen with a sense that he was about to withdraw from its keeping the rarest object it had ever owned. He had come alone, not to embarrass them, and had intended to halt a couple of hours in the neighboring seaport to give some orders relating to the wedding, but the little railway train being in waiting to take him on, he proceeded with a natural impatience, resolving to do his business here by messenger from the isle. He passed the ruins of the Tudor castle, and the long featureless rib of grinding pebbles that screened off the outer sea, which could be heard lifting and dipping rhythmically in the white vagueness of the bay. At the underhill island townlet of the Wells there were no flies, and leaving his things to be brought on, as he often did, he climbed the eminence on foot. Halfway up the steepest part of the pass he saw in the dusk a figure pausing, the single person on the incline. Though it was too dark to identify faces, Pearson gathered from the way in which the halting stranger was supporting himself by the handrail, which here be ordered the road to assist climbers, that the person was exhausted. "Anything the matter?" he said. "Oh no, not much," was returned by the other. "But it is steep just here." The accent was not quite that of an Englishman, and struck him as hailing from one of the Channel Islands. "Can't I help you up to the top?" he said, for the voice, though that of a young man, seemed faint and shaken. "No, thank you. I have been ill, but I thought I was all right again, and as the night was fine I walked into the island by the road. It turned out to be rather too much for me, as there is some weakness left still, and this stiffing line brought it out. Apostrophe apostrophe, naturally. You'd better take hold of my arm at any rate to the brow here. Apostrophe apostrophe, thus pressed the stranger did so, and they went on towards the ridge, till, reaching the lime kiln standing there, the stranger abandoned his hold, saying, "Thank you for your assistance, sir. Good night." Apostrophe, I don't think I recognize your voice as a native's. Apostrophe apostrophe, no, it is not. I am a Jersey man. Good night, sir. Apostrophe, good night, if you are sure you can get on. Here, take this stick, it is no use to me. Apostrophe apostrophe, saying which, Pearson put his walking stick into the young man's hand. Thank you again. I shall be quite recovered when I have rested a minute or two. Don't let me detain you, please. Apostrophe, the stranger as he spoke, turned his face towards the south, where the beel light had just come into view, and stood regarding it with an obstinate fixity. As he evidently wished to be left to himself, Jocelyn went on, and troubled no more about him, though the desire of the young man to be rid of his company, after accepting his walking stick and his arm, had come with a suddenness that was almost emotional, and impressionable as Jocelyn was, no less now than in youth, he was saddened for a minute by the sense that there were people in the world who did not like even his sympathy. However, a pleasure which obliterated all this arose when Pearson drew near to the house that was likely to be his dear home on all future visits to the isle, perhaps even his permanent home as he grew older, and the associations of his youth reasserted themselves. It had been, too, his father's house, the house in which he was born, and he amused his fancy with plans for its enlargement under the supervision of a vicegerent himself. It was a still greater pleasure to behold a tall and shapely figure standing against the light of the open door and presumably awaiting him. A vice, who it was, gave a little jump when she recognized him, but dutifully allowed him to kiss her when he reached her side, though her nervousness was only too apparent, and was like a child's towards a parent who may prove stern. "How dear of you to guess that I might come on at once instead of later." Apostrophe apostrophe, said Jocelyn. "Well, if I had stayed in the town, to go to the shops and so on, I could not have got here till the last train. How is mother, our mother, as I shall call her soon?" Apostrophe, a vice said, that her mother had not been so well, she feared not nearly so well since her return from London, so that she was obliged to keep her room. The visit had perhaps been too much for her. But she will not acknowledge that she is much weaker, because she will not disturb my happiness. Apostrophe apostrophe, Jocelyn was in a mood to let trifles of manner pass, and he took no notice of the effort which had accompanied the last word. They went upstairs to Mrs. Pearson, whose obvious relief and thankfulness at sight of him was grateful to her visitor. "I am so, oh so glad you are come. Apostrophe apostrophe," she said huskily, as she held out her thin hand, and stifled a sob. "I have been so apostrophe," she could get no further for a moment, and the vice turned away weeping, and abruptly left the room. "I have so set my heart on this," apostrophe Mrs. Pearson went on, "that I have not been able to sleep of late, for I have feared I might drop off suddenly, before she is yours, and lose the comfort of seeing you actually united. Your being so kind to me in old times has made me so sure that she will find a good husband in you, that I am over anxious, I know. Indeed, I have not liked to let her know quite how anxious I am." Apostrophe apostrophe, thus they talked till Jocelyn bade her good night, it being noticeable that Mrs. Pearson, chastened by her illnesses, maintained no longer any reserve on her gladness to acquire him as her son-in-law, and her feelings destroyed any remaining scruples he might have had from perceiving that a vice's consent was rather an obedience than a desire. As he went downstairs, and found a vice awaiting his descent, he wondered if anything had occurred here during his absence to give Mrs. Pearson new uneasiness about the marriage, but it was an inquiry he could not address to a girl whose actions could alone be the cause of such uneasiness. He looked round for her as he supped, but the less he had come into the room with him, she was not there now. He remembered her telling him that as he had had supper with her mother, and Jocelyn sat on quietly musing, and sipping his wine for something near half an hour. Wondering then for the first time what had become of her, he rose and went to the door. A vice was quite near him after all, only standing at the front door as he had been doing when he came, looking into the light of the full moon, which had risen since his arrival. His sudden opening of the dining room door seemed to agitate her. "What is it, dear?" he asked. "As mother is much better, and doesn't want me, I ought to go and see somebody. I promised to take a parcel to. I feel I ought. And yet, as you have just come to see me, I suppose you don't approve of my going out while you are here?" Who is the person? Somebody down that way, she said indefinitely. "It is not very far off. I am not afraid. I go out often by myself at night hereabout." He reassured her good-humoredly. "If you really wish to go, my dear, of course I don't object. I have no authority to do that till tomorrow, and you know that, if I had it, I shouldn't use it." "Oh, but you have. Mother being an invalid, you are in her place, apart from tomorrow." "Nonsense, darling. Run across to your friend's house by all means, if you want to. And you'll be here when I come in?" "No, I am going down to the inn to see if my things are brought up." "But hasn't mother asked you to stay here? The spare room was got ready for you." "Dear me, I am afraid I ought to have told you." "She did ask me. But I have some things coming, directed to the inn, and I had better be there. So I'll wish you good night, though it is not late. I will come in quite early tomorrow, to inquire how your mother is going on, and to wish you good morning. You will be back again quickly this evening?"
"Oh yes."
"And I needn't go with you for company?"
"Oh no, thank you. It is no distance."
Pearson then departed, thinking how entirely her manner was that of one to whom a question of doing anything was a question of permission, and not of judgment. He had no sooner gone than a vice took a parcel from a cupboard, put on her hat and cloak, and following by the way he had taken till she reached the entrance to Sylvania Castle, there stood still. She could hear Pearson's footsteps passing down East Quarriers to the inn, but she went no further in that direction. Turning into the lane on the right, of which mention has so often been made, she went quickly past the last cottage, and having entered the gorge beyond, she clambered into the ruin of the Red King's Bow and Arrow Castle, standing as a square black mass against the moonlit, indefinite sea. 3. 6. The well-beloved is where? Mrs. Pearson passed a restless night, but this she let nobody know, nor, what was painfully evident to herself, that her prostration was increased by anxiety and suspense about the wedding on which she had too much set her heart. During the very brief space in which she dozed, a vice came into her room. As it was not infrequent for her daughter to look in upon her thus, she took little notice, merely saying to assure the girl, "I am better, dear. Don't come in again. Get to sleep yourself." The mother, however, went thinking anew. She had no apprehensions about this marriage. She felt perfectly sure that it was the best thing she could do for her girl. Not a young woman on the island, but was envying a vice at that moment, for Jocelyn was absurdly young for 80, a good-looking man, one whose history was generally known here, as also were the exact figures of the fortune he had inherited from his father, and the social standing he could claim. A standing, however, which that fortune would not have been large enough to procure unassisted by his reputation in his art. But a vice had been weak enough, as her mother knew, to indulge in fancies for local youths from time to time, and Mrs. Pearson could not help congratulating herself that her daughter had been so docile in the circumstances. Yet to everyone except, perhaps, a vice herself, Jocelyn was the most romantic of lovers. Indeed, was there ever such a romance as that man embodied in his relations to her house? Rejecting the first device, the second had rejected him, and to rally to the third with final achievement was an artistic and tender finish to which it was ungrateful in anybody to be blind. The widow thought that the second device might probably not have rejected Pearson on that occasion in the London studio, so many years ago, if destiny had not arranged that she should have been secretly united to another when the proposing moment came. But what had come was best. My God, apostrophe she said at times that night, to think my aim in writing to him should be fulfilling itself like this. Apostrophe, apostrophe, when all was right and done, what a success upon the whole her life would have been. She who had begun her career as a cottage girl, a small quarry owner's daughter, had sunk so low as to the position of laundress, had engaged in various menial occupations, had made an unhappy marriage for love which had, however, in the long run, thanks to Jocelyn's management, much improved her position, was at last to see her daughter secure what she herself had just missed securing, and established in a home of affluence and refinement. Thus the sick woman excited herself as the hours went on. At last, in her tenseness it seemed to her that the time had already come at which the household was stirring, and she fancied she heard conversation in her daughter's room. But she found that it was only 5 o'clock, and not yet daylight. Her state was such that she could see the hangings of the bed tremble with her tremors. As he had declared overnight that she did not require anyone to sit up with her, but she now rang a little handbell, and in a few minutes a nurse appeared. Ruth Stockwell. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.